wonderful new book written by our next guest, Steve Wiegand. Here's what Steve says about himself and the flap of his book. Steve is a lifelong baseball fan, even though his own prowess in the game peaked at age 11 when he hit a real over-the-fence home run for the immortal Robbins Frosties Little League team. It was the only homer of his career, and probably an accident. Destined for outdoor work, he spent 35 years as a reporter and columnist for the San Diego Evening Tribune, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the Sacramento Bee. Steve's the author, co-author, or contributing author of 10 books, including 1876, Year of the Gun, The Dancer, The Dreamers, and The Queen of Romania, U.S. History for Dummies, and this brand new book entitled The Uncommon Life of Danny O'Connell. We are pleased to be joined this afternoon by author Steve Wiegand.
Hi, Rich.
Hi there, Steve. How are you today?
Not too bad. How about yourself?
Wonderful, thank you. And a big part of that is because I had so much fun reading this wonderful book. It reminds us, I think, of what we loved about baseball as kids.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
Well, it's such a terrific read, and it covers so many aspects of not just baseball, but American history as well, and certainly disabuses the notion of common cards and common players.
Oh, I hope so. It certainly did. It was an eye-opener for me while I was researching it.
Well, Danny O'Connell has such an interesting story, and as you point out, also touched on baseball history in several occasions. Can you talk about a little of his history-making ventures?
He did. He was kind of part of the threads that were woven through the game during his era. He scored the first run in an official baseball game played in the West Coast between the Dodgers and the Giants, and he made the last out at Griffith Stadium in Washington, D.C. before they closed it down. So he kind of went coast to coast. He played with some of the all-time greats of the game. In one season in 1957, he batted second and for the Milwaukee Braves, and right behind him was Henry Aaron. And then he got traded to the New York Giants, and he batted second, and right behind him was Willie Mays. So not a whole lot of people that can say they batted right in front of Willie Mays and Hank Aaron in the same season. He kind of spanned baseball history through that decade.
And he came along at such an important time in baseball history, that post-war era integration happening in the sport and in America as well. And it meant that, as you point out, to just make it to the major leagues, stack the odds even more against you. And then to do what he did, to hang around for a decade, that was something only a very few were able to accomplish.
Right. I did some numbers digging, and as you know, baseball is nothing if it's not a game of numbers. Danny O'Connell was born in 1929, and there were 1.1 million American males born that same year. Of that 1.1 million, 93 made it to the big leagues, and only 27 of those played for as much as a decade, and Danny O'Connell was one of them. So talk about beating the odds. That's quite a feat in and of itself. And it kind of belies the idea that there's such a thing as an average major league player.
Well, also, this was a time, too, when baseball, which was the predominant professional sport in America at the time, was being challenged by the Mexican League. And as you point out, that led to some early discussions around the idea of unionization. But am I right in reading into this that it was the pension that kept players quiet for a while and held off, at least for a couple of decades, unionization?
Yeah, that was much more when you're talking about the late 1940s, and there was a league formed in Mexico, and it was very tempting for players to jump down there, and they talked about being unionized, but they held off because the major league team owners gave in and created a pension system for the players. And that was key to Danny O'Connell's life in his career as well, because to get the pension, to get the whole pension, you had to play 10 years, which was very difficult. Most players play less than five. He persevered, scrabbled back to the majors at the end of his career, got his 10 years in. And as a result of that, when he died, his widow inherited the pension, and it was enough with some other investments to put all four of their kids through prestigious colleges, and they all went on to successful careers, and that was because of the pension. And he got the pension because of his hard work and determination to stay in the game. So the whole cycle of working for a living but playing a game and doing something you loved was completed by that.
One of the things you do in the book that is terrific, to put it in terms that we can understand in the modern day, is that whenever you talk about money, you give the representation of what that would be in 2024 dollars.
Right. I'm always, when I'm reading a book and they're talking about something from, say, the 19th century, and it costs $12, I always kind of wonder, you know, how much that was. And it's not a very, the numbers, it's a little bit comparing apples and oranges because there are other factors involved. But it does give you a little bit of a sense of you know, what we're talking about, what the money was worth. And, for instance, his salary was about $14,000 average during his career. And you think, oh, that's not very much money, but it was about three times what the average American family was making in the 50s. So it was pretty good money. And having said that, they weren't living the life of Riley as baseball players because their careers were so short. And so O'Connell, when the season ended, he'd go home and trade his uniform for a business suit and go sell beer or deliver packages for UPS. He always had an off-season job.
We're talking with Steve Wiegand about his wonderful book, The Uncommon Life of Danny O'Connell. And one of the things that the war did was also to change players' attitudes. And you point out that Pirates manager Frankie Frisch, certainly a throwback to the old days, and his style of managing didn't really go along well with players' approach to the game in that post-war period.
Right. In the pre-World War II days, managers were dictators. They were gods. And you did what they told you to do. But think about it. You come back from two or three years overseas fighting or seeing your buddies die or being injured yourself, and there's some fellow who's 20 years older than you telling you how they did it back in the good old days. You've seen, you know, real life. You put baseball in perspective, and you don't take as much as you used to.
One of the things that make this such a powerful book is that you are constantly grounding us on where things were in America and in the world at this time, and nowhere to me does that come home more powerfully than in the story of a young man from West Virginia, Kenny Shadrick.
Yeah, Kenny Shadrick was widely regarded as the first American casualty in the Korean War. So while Danny O'Connell was playing baseball for the Indianapolis Indians, in the minor leagues, Kenny Shadrick was in a graveyard in Korea fighting North Korean tanks. And so Danny O'Connell spent 2 years in the military doing his duty as a draftee during the Korean War. But basically all he did was play baseball for the Army. And so I hope it keeps it somewhat in perspective that baseball, I love baseball, but it is, after all, a game, and it's an entertainment vehicle. And there are other things going on in life in America at the time as well.
You also look at the very interesting history of baseball cards. And as somebody like you who would put those on the spokes of my bicycle, at least you didn't do anything like I did, Steve, when I had, I think it was a 1962 Mickey Mantle card. But when I was about 7 years old, as a Red Sox fan, I took an eraser and erased Yankees on his card and wrote in my crude writing, Red Sox. I may have slightly diminished the value of that card.
Well, we're simpatico, Rich, because I was a San Francisco Giants fan, and all of my Sandy Koufax cards went up on dart boards or ended up in the same way, so...
Well, I was fascinated to learn that cards, baseball cards, and other type of trading cards go all the way back to the mid-19th century.
Right. After the Civil War, cigarettes became a very big industry in America. And they had a problem because the packages that they put the cigarettes in were soft, and the cigarettes got bent. So they started inserting cardboard backing And the cardboard had pictures of actresses and authors and famous Americans, including baseball players. And kids would clamor for the dads to buy a particular brand of cigarettes so they could get the baseball cards. And when the dads wouldn't do it, the kids started buying the cigarettes. And tobacco companies paid a whole lot of money off kids of the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s buying cigarettes so they could get the baseball cards. And, of course, they tried the cigarettes as well.
I guess I'm okay with the fact that I missed the experiment. I think it was from Topps of putting taffy with the baseball cards as well, and that didn't turn out so well.
No, the first 2 years that Topps became the General Motors of baseball cards for most of the last half century. But their initial foray into the baseball cards, they put a piece of caramel in. Only the caramel picked up the varnish from the baseball cards and made it inedible, if not poisonous. So they dropped that after 1 year.
And the story of the king of bubblegum, Warren Bowman, was a really fascinating one to read.
He is a fascinating character. I mean, you're talking about a guy who gets a job as a Los Angeles police officer, and he stops a Los Angeles assistant chief. And the chief notices that Warren Bowman has three young women in the squad car with him. So that was the end of his police career. He went down to Mexico and tried to be a turtle hunter. That didn't work because his boat sank. And eventually he ended up selling bubble gum and got the idea to put baseball cards in with the bubble gum. This was in the late 1940s and made quite a lot of money doing that.
Well, Danny O'Connell is such a fascinating story, and I kept thinking throughout the book, boy, what would his life be like as a major leaguer today with those skills, with his willingness to say what was on his mind, although sometimes that backfired for him. But a guy like O'Connell today, it boggles the mind to think the kind of money he'd be making.
Yeah, assuming it's hard sometimes to compare athletes from one era to another, but assuming he could compete at the major league level, he was very versatile, so he could play a lot of positions, and that is invaluable in today's game because of injuries. A guy who can move from second base to third base or third base to shortstop is very valuable. And he could have made more in 2 years in the major leagues today than he made in 16 or 17 years as a professional player back when he played. But I don't know that he would trade it, because there was so much more a joy of the game and playing and the camaraderie sort of the community that baseball had in those days, and that's what he loved. So who knows?
Well, he was a guy who was valued by managers and respected by teammates and opponents as well, and obviously a great family guy, and all that makes his untimely death that much more sad. That chapter, I went back and read it a second time. It was so moving.
Yeah, it's funny because, not as a spoiler alert, he died very young, not long after he retired from baseball. But when I turned the manuscript in, my editor said, "Couldn't you change the ending?" So,
well, you know,
it was sad.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say it was sad, but on the other hand, the guy, three-fourths of his life, he played a game that he loved, and he did it for a living, and he was well-liked by his, like you said, his players and his teammates and his opponents. He had a loving family. He was loved where he lived in northern New Jersey, and I think he had a pretty nice life, and all of his kids prospered. Because of his baseball pension, largely went to colleges, had great careers, and have led good lives. So I think if you ask him, he'd say, you know, I'd rather not die young, but I had a pretty good life, and I left behind a pretty good legacy.
He sure did, yeah. And anything but common life. The book is called The Uncommon Life of Danny O'Connell. Steve Wiegand, I love the book. Great to talk with you. Appreciate you making time for us today.
Oh, thank you for making time for me, Rich.